Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunaktu, Sahaveyankaravavahai, Tejasvinavati, Tamastumavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
In Mantra 18, the devotee prays to be free from sinful reactions. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna promises, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami. I will deliver you from all sins. The devotee prays to be freed of sin because this will clear his way back to Godhead. Okay. Another aspect of Mantra 18 is explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport. Quote, in this mantra of Sri Ishupanishad, the devotee prays the Lord to rectify him from within his heart. To err is human. A conditioned soul is very often apt to commit mistakes. And the only remedial measure is to take against such unintentional sins is to give oneself up to the lotus feet of the Lord, so that he may guide one to avoid such pitfalls. Here, a very important element is this element of unintentional sins. Because if you follow modern definition of devotees, there won't be such a thing. Because if you thought, I'm attracted to that, I'm going to do that. Just that you thought, I'm going to do it, means there's an intention and there's a plan and all that. So therefore you're basically, sinful pawn scum of the universe. Right? But unintentional means it's not your plan, this is not your goal. That broadens that range very greatly. It means if your goal is materialism, then you can say it's intentional. If you think it is fine, it's good, right? Then it can come into that category, yes.
In the end of Ishupanishad, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks about a person who is a devotee who shows temporary worldly mindedness. And the discussion we had was, is that fall down, is that sinful activity, or is that just that he all of a sudden needs fancy this, fancy that, or what is that worldly mindedness for a devotee, just so we can better understand it, because he's talking about us.
Yeah, worldly mindedness is that the attention starts to go more on the world and needs of the world that we would be considered as, typical, things of this world. Your family life, your position, wealth, fame, all these different things. So the attention may go into that, but as we were seeing is that it was being discussed with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that this element of chanting, then whether one has all desires or no desires, it's still the process. And by full absorption in that, then it works. Because this being humble, being tolerant, being respecting others, not expecting any respect for yourself, even if you want to be the grossest materialist, you still need these four qualities. Right? But, of course, we understand those four qualities won't be manifest in their completeness. Because if the humility is actually complete, we understand we're serving a Krishna. So then we give up that idea that I am the controller and enjoyer. So therefore, material desire goes away. Does that make sense? But up to a point, there must be humility, tolerance, respect, and not expecting anything back, even if you want to be successful in material life. You can't do otherwise. The businessman, against all odds, he has to be humble. He has to get in there, do whatever needs to be done. He has to be tolerant. Things don't work the way he wants them. He has to be respectful to all these other persons that are there. He can't expect anything back. And he keeps working like that, and then he becomes successful. So, in any case, those qualities have to be had. Developing qualities, then connecting that to Krishna, then they become dynamic, then they become real. Right? So then, even if one has all material desires, one still has to follow the same process. So for the devotee, whether he has material desires or not, still the process remains the same. It doesn't change.
So worldly-mindedness doesn't mean fall down or breaking the principle?
Not necessarily, because, see, fall down means it's not connected to Krishna. And sinful then means it's, you know, would be the same, not connected to Krishna, you know? It would be, and not what we would say is not recommended activities, right? So pious activities would be a natural worldly mindedness that the devotee might get entangled in, but it's very dangerous, because being distracted from Krishna, that's where the loss of Krishna consciousness is. It's not the activity, it's the loss of Krishna consciousness. Yes.
The word temporary just indicated, or could be taken to indicate a fall down, because...
Can be, but it doesn't have to be. That's what I'm saying, is that in our definitions, we have to be very exact, because otherwise, it's very easy, means you have it's a English saying, give a dog a bad name and hang him, right? You don't like somebody or something, and so therefore you say it's bad, and therefore then you write it off. So that's very, very easy for the neophyte devotee to do. So that's what I'm saying here, is that this element, because then what will happen is the holy name is the only remedial measure against such unintentional sin. So generally when I've heard devotees discuss, much of the time, they can turn anything into an intentional sin, because in their own mind, they are so actually overwhelmed by these kind of activities. So maybe in the positive or the negative, you know, maybe they've corrected themselves, and so therefore they're on a, you know, how you say, crusade against everybody else, or in some way to put themselves that they're good and they're special, they're religious, I'm pious, I follow, and everybody else who doesn't is a complete rat bag, right? So then the difficulty comes up is in this is the compassion goes, because there's no tolerance, because only with tolerance is there compassion. So since they have intolerance for sinful activity, rather than I don't engage myself, I have an intolerance towards it. Right, so therefore there's no compassion towards others, and then the preaching becomes stunted, because one is, okay, I can preach to the karmis who are doing all sorts of nonsense by just seeing the good quality, seeing the spark and fanning it, but if it's a devotee, I won't see the spark, I'll only see the sin. So even though there's a raging fire, if there's any sin, then they're a write-off. So therefore the compassion goes, and the problem is you go from a neophyte to a madhyama to an uttam. So if at the advancing stages, then they're thrown out, how you're ever going to get anybody to the uttam platform? You'll never get. So that kind of position is unfavorable for the preaching movement. It doesn't mean that there's a laxness or there's a liberalness, which is interesting to note, is those who are claimed to be the more modern and liberal are the ones that are the most generally fanatic about, you know, these unintentional sins that they call intentional. It's very interesting to watch this contradiction like that.
So temporary might mean a couple of months, might also mean a couple of decades. Depending.
Yeah, can even mean lifetimes. That's the whole point, is once one's in illusion, then you don't call it intentional. One is that here's Krishna consciousness, here's Maya. The Maya actually is better than Krishna consciousness. That's intentional. Just you're engaged there and get distracted by it. That's not intentional. You know what I'm saying? What's his name? Vishwamitra, right? And Menaka. That's not intentional. But he made a decision. You know, he's doing his meditation. Menaka is there dancing, you know, breaks his meditation. He could have at that time just, you know, closed his eyes and gone back to his meditation. but he decided to go with Menaka. So in some people's mind, it's because he made that decision, therefore it's intentional. No, but this whole thing is just he was overwhelmed by the modes of nature. Right? And then, okay, he was overwhelmed, and immediately he should have given it up. Otherwise, it's intentional. No, it'll cover its course, whatever is the desire. So for him, because he was nicely situated, then it was just one interaction with Menaka. But for some, we see, it goes over many interactions until one goes, hey, this is crazy. So between that illusion and one understanding this is stupid, and then either dropping or making the attempt to drop it, that's the unintentional. So one has to be very, very careful on this, you know, how one defines that. So like you said, it's temporary, because everything's temporary anyway except for Krishna consciousness. So we ourselves make Maya more important than it actually is. Not that it's not important, it has to be addressed. If not, because people are conditioned by it, if we take it lightly, then they will remain absorbed. So you have to take the hard line. But at the same time, is that taking of the hard line is simply for the effect of the, how you say, devotee's distraction. It's not in reality any importance. You know what I'm saying? Just like the parent must sometimes make a strong stand on a point to the child, and it may appear that they're angry or things like that, but they do that simply for the benefit of the child. They're not actually angry. They're concerned, like that. You know, I see it so many times, at least in India, you know, parents would make the eyes big and like, oh yeah, you know, like this and that, and all the mudras that you would use, like let's say in theater, to show anger and all that, and then the kids, you know, because they're, you know, more simple, so melodrama works very well for them. And so then they, whoa, like this and that. And then you know, it's done. It was a trick. It wasn't that they're actually angry. So in the same way as the strongness in which you deal with the senses and all that, that's there because we're so conditioned to them and so attracted by them that you have to take that strong stand. But in reality, the connection to Krishna is the real thing. So the reason that we're taking a strong stand on the sensual distraction or the material distraction is because it's distracting from Krishna. Otherwise, it's an illusion. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what's the thing? The kid's sitting there, he's got a light, and he's making, you know, hand things in the thing and making, you know, swans or birds or this or that. What does it matter which ones he makes? It's all illusion. It's not real. And so it's like, oh, he did the swan. Oh no, he did the bird. Oh, you know, it's like, you know, that's actually the foolishness of it. The thing is that it doesn't really matter. The only thing that matters about it is it distracts you from Krishna. So that's the problem with sin. It's so distracting that you forget Krishna. The problem is that the sin is illusion. The problem is the forgetting Krishna. But because remembering Krishna, forgetting Krishna is not the prominent thing on our mind. It's sin or no sin that's prominent on our mind. Therefore, we take the stand on the sin and no sin business. Because that's what will mean something to you. You know, it's just like the child. You tell him, don't do that, it's not nice, it's not good for you. And if he goes, oh, okay, sorry, then that's all you do. But if you say, hey, don't do that, and they keep doing it, then you show the anger and all those kind of things. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that these things are there to bring us back to Krishna. You know, that's the idea. But they must be applied that they do that. If they don't, and simply it's a correction or punishment for a sin without really bringing one to Krishna consciousness, it's just that they've sinned, so that must be punished, the person who is applying that punishment doesn't actually understand the process, and they're making a grave mistake here, because they're putting material life as more potent and more strong and more valuable than Krishna consciousness. Right? Krishna consciousness is always to be dealt with, therefore in dealing with it, you have to deal with everything else. Right? You want to protect your house. Protecting your house is the main thing, not, you know, putting out fires or anything else, but if the fire starts, you have to put it out. Because it's not that the fire, if it's out somewhere else, who cares? If it's burning in a garbage can somewhere, who cares if it's burning? So it's not that fires must be put out. No, it's that this fire will destroy the house. Right? So the house is important. Right? So Krishna consciousness is important. I mean, if the fire is in the fireplace, nobody cares. If the fire is on your sofa, it's a problem. Right? Like that. So the problem is not the fire. The problem is it beneficial or not to the house? Right? So Krishna consciousness is the real thing. Material life is not real. But because we think it's real, therefore it's dealt with as if it is. But if someone actually believes that it is, that's a mistake. Right? That's a grave mistake. And the difficulty with it is then it will actually distract devotees from real Krishna consciousness. They'll start taking other things as more important. They'll get distracted that good management or good PR or good political correctness or good bureaucracy, all these things are symptoms of Krishna consciousness when they're not. They are things to engage in Krishna consciousness. They are not Krishna consciousness themselves. Pure chanting of the holy name, you know, according to the previous acharyas, that's devotional service. Like that. And to do that, therefore, we engage all those things that for us, that are actually technically material, that we think is important in Krishna's service. Like that. You know, so even someone is ambitious and he wants to be the top of the pot, he's got to become the GBC chairman. Great, as long as he's doing all that for Krishna. He may have the material desire, but he still is engaging that desire. And he's doing a nice job of his management and everything else for Krishna. And then by doing that with time, it'll be purified and he'll give up the need that he has to be this because it's, you know, of his ambition. The ambition will be purified and will go. And now he'll be able to do those things just to please Krishna. Like that. Is that okay?
Yes. I'm trying to understand this, the mind of a fanatic.
The mind of a fanatic.
Yeah, on this point.
Sounds like you could write a book. The mind of a fanatic.
Because it's very, you know, it's prominent.
Festivals coming. You read a seminar. Right? The mind of a fanatic. Are you a fanatic? Come to the seminar, find out.
Well, you're putting, yeah, maybe. So on this point of intention, if I'm really fanatically focused on intentions in a fanatical way, mm-hmm. then it sounds like that I just can't face what's in me.
You
because I'm sort of projecting it on.
It is actually what's going on, but the element of projection isn't something that can be used. It's called aropya, right? So one can, through aropya, come to aropi siddhi. Just like the sadhana siddhi. So aropya siddhi means that those things that are important to me, that I put as a covering over others, because aropi means, I think, to cover. So I put those things over other things. It means, in other words, I say, let's say, cars are important. So therefore, I engage my car in Krishna's service. And because it's Krishna's car, I take care of it very nicely. I get it polished. I do all the things that I would normally do because I would be actually take the car more seriously. But now, because it was my car, but now if it's Krishna's car, I can take care of it in the same degree. Like that, you know, because I'm looking for whatever the efficiency or this or that. You know, some things I might have to change. Maybe I'll take down the, you know, the tube, you know, whatever it is, you know, foam dice things hanging there, something like that. You know, the what do you call it? The raccoon tail on the aerial, you know, something like that. So,
Murupi Goswami says that we do it even better.
Yes, we'll do it even better. So that's sometimes a mistake because in doing it better, you're more confident, and then that will also raise. In other words, the fanatics on one side will get you for the one thing, and the fanatics on the other will get you for, you know, like that. So it's, you know.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, no good deed goes unpunished. It's a very important understanding, this phrase. So.
What does it mean you can engage it, though?
Well, here, let's go back to the one thing, then we'll come to this. Is that the it's like this. If you have eyes, you can see. Right? You have a nose, you can smell. You know, like some living entities don't have these things. Worms don't have eyes, they can't see. Like that. So they don't worry about what something looks like. Right? They worry about what it feels like. You know? If it's moist earth, they can get through it. If it's dry, they don't go there. You know? Like that. So the same way is, let's say, if you are a manager, if you go into a situation, what you will notice is those things in connection with management. If you're a pujari, then you'll notice those things in connection with that. If you're, you know, you know cleanliness, you'll notice if something's clean or not. So whatever is your quality is all that you can see with. It means, in other words, what you have is what you can do. You have money, you can buy things. You don't have money, you don't buy things. You're like that. If you're hungry, you see food. You're not hungry, you don't notice food. You can walk down a street that's all restaurants and don't really notice them. But if you're hungry, you'll notice everything, you know, every pretzel, walnut, every this, that. You're going to notice it. So when you say that you're only projecting that on others, it's true. But now the point is whether that's in a purified state and whether it's connected to Krishna or not. So it's not a problem to project it. The problem is if what you're projecting is not connected to Krishna or is in an unpurified state. Like that. That will be the problem. So if you value following rules nicely and everything like that, that's great, because that will mean you'll follow the sadhana bhakti very nicely. Then naturally, if you project that on others in a purified way connected to Krishna, then you will see how to connect everybody else to these nice rules and make them understand them, teach them how to practice them, encourage them, and then they've benefited from the same thing that my quality. They may not have that quality, but I can benefit them with my quality.
So purified way, it sounds like you're saying it means, like the old saying, I'm strict with myself and I'm liberal toward others. I'm not discouraging them in my focus.
Yes, I'm not discouraging. But if it's unpurified, then it's going to be I'm liberal with myself and very strict with others. So that's where the fanatic comes in. Sometimes you get a fanatic, they're very strict with themselves, very strict with others. But at least that's honest. We can understand it. It will be an annoyance, but they're as strict with themselves as with others. It can be understood. Like I know one devotee, he has no qualms on criticizing anybody, you know, like that. But at the same time, he can criticize himself better than anybody else in front of others. So even though it's an annoyance, you know, it's always critical. But at the same time, you can respect it because he sees his own faults just as much as anybody else's.
Walks his talk.
Yeah, like that. It's not an ideal. It's not recommended by the acharyas. But, you know, but at least it has a consistency there. You know? So, therefore, if we can, it's in a purified state. But if it's a matter of, we take it that the following the rules and regulations is the important element, rather than that's a very useful thing in Krishna's service, because the process has rules and regulations. It has a philosophy. It has a method. Therefore, following this is useful. But it's being Krishna conscious that's important, because in the 26 qualities of the devotee, always remembering Krishna, and always being surrendered to Krishna, that's the one lakshana that's always eternal. The other 25 may be manifest or not, like humility is one of them. But sometimes Bhima, in his service to Krishna, is not known for being overly humble. Like that. So these qualities may come up and go down. But he's humble as far as his older brother goes. You know, he's submissive. Like that. So, you know, so these qualities may come and go. And so if we say one of these qualities, that is devotional service. No, these are qualities that come up from someone who has devotional service. In other words, if you have that constant absorption and remembrance of Krishna, then these 25 qualities come up according to your nature and the situation. Like that. Like, there's bhava. But bhava has the, you know, the sattvika bhavas and the sthayi bhavas and all these different things. But depending on the situation, then they'll be manifest. Sthayi bhava is fixed, but the other things, whether there's sattvika bhava, sanchari bhavas, all these things, that depends on the situation, what's there. Sometimes they're manifest, sometimes they're not. You know, if everybody was always, you know, in the mood of stunned, you know, nothing would happen. You know, like that. You know, I guess you could call in, what is it? What was her name? Madame Trudeau or something like that, and you know, set up a ticket thing, and then it would be happening. You know, the Brudge Leela, you know, exhibition, you know, something like that. So you know, say, well, these guys, they're not actually wax; they're real, but they're just stunned in ecstasy of love of God. And they're, oh yeah, you know, so you know, like that, then you could have something. But the point is it's variety; it's always changing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Actually, in Matthew 17, the purport of Prabhupada says that the identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless. On the contrary, it is the material dress that is formless and that takes a shape according to the form of the respective person.
Ah, so, very good. Did you all hear that? No. Could you read it louder again?
The identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless. On the contrary, it is the material dress that is formless and that takes a shape according to the form of the indestructible person.
Yes. So in there is that the soul is always the eternal servant of Krishna. So he's always a person. That's there, whether he understands it or not. The forms that you take in the material world, those are formless. Because pradhan, is the natural state of material energy is pradhan, which is formless. So it only takes a form according to the thinking of the living entity. So Prabhupada says, the soul is the doctor, not the body. The soul thinks, I am a doctor. Therefore, the material energy then is transformed to look like a doctor. You know what I'm saying? Material energy has no form. It's formless. But the soul is never formless. But we take it the other way. We take it the soul is formless and the material energy is form. So we agree, you know, with the process of liberation is the same for us and for the impersonalists. You know, it's just like if you want to go to the temple, whether you're, you know, the local dog or, you know, you're the devotee, the process is the same. It doesn't change. But the difference is this viewpoint of what actually is eternal and what's not, what's formless and what's not. But the process of giving up attachment, so here we give up attachment to the formless. You know, they get it by giving up. They also, what is it? Yeah. But they give up the formless, but they don't know it's formless. And they think the soul has no form when it actually does. But you understand? That's why it's very important. That's why we're teaching in this process words. We have to see the phrases. And like, we're, you know, and that other thing we're seeing before is, and it says the only remedial measure to take against unintentional sins is give oneself up. So here, remedial. Most will say the only measure to take against, because they're looking, what measure to take? No, but the point is remedial. Because you're supposed to, if you're distracted from Krishna, bring it back to Krishna. So the only remedy for that is Krishna consciousness. So you have to read the words. You have to see what those phrases mean. They're not just some just happenstance, you know, formation of words. It's not that down at the BBT in Sweden that don't tell this to anybody. But they have 1 million monkeys there at typewriters, right? And they all type and all that. And then when someone comes up with something, then they take that and put that, you know, into the book, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not working like that. It's that each word, Prabhupada said, is being carefully chosen.
Document.
Yeah. Document. So each word is considered, you know, like that. Sometimes the purport would come very quickly, and sometimes he would take days to write a purport, because you'd be thinking about a word. So that word carries the full meaning of what's there. These things are not noticed, but that's why one does study so that one notices. Remedial measure means means depending, I don't know what the grammatical thing would be here, whether the remedial or the measure would be the main thing. The measure will be the action, but the remedial is the kind of action. So action must be taken, but that action must be remedial. And it says the only remedial is chanting the holy name. It doesn't give another thing. So we can't miss that. We can't see, okay, sin and some measure. you know, something must be taken. We have to take the whole thing. You have to catch all the words and all the phrases, like that. So in here, then, we can see is that the material nature, we understand, that's why creation is so important, because without knowing creation, we can't understand these things. Creation is pradan. Only when the living entities and time factor and false ego are put into the material energy, then it becomes mahat. Right? Then there's the primary creation, which everything is created in its primordial form. So the interactions between those forms is already established and going on. The energies are already moving. Then, but you're still dealing with unmanifest, it means it's been broken down according to the desire of the living entity. But it's just there. Then, when you desire something, then it becomes manifest. Does that make sense? So it's that's the whole point. Without training, many times things are opposite from what they seem, both philosophically and culturally. So that's why it's training. That's what makes a human being. He's trained. Is that okay?
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Yes, a little knowledge is that, yeah, it has to be enough that you actually don't, you know, cut your head off.
Okay.
Devotee should not seek just nullification of his sinful reactions. He should be eager to rectify himself according to the Lord's directions. The conditioned soul naturally has many doubts and erroneous ideas. All such misconceptions should be corrected. Devotee should adjust himself according to the laws of God and not vice versa. That didn't work well for Socrates. In order to make this step, one should be sincere and not crooked. The sincere devotee will achieve the goal even if he is unable to follow all the rules and regulations in the beginning. Even if he is unable. On the other hand, a crooked person cannot be saved because of his unwillingness to rectify his heart. This is explained in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 3:32. Right, so here the thing is it's not enough to nullify sinful reactions. You have to develop love of God. So developing love of God requires nullification of sinful reactions. That's why we do it. Right? Does that make sense? That's the reason. It's not just getting rid of that. So fanatic means it's just following the rule, just removing the sin. That's all that's necessary. No, but it has to go further. So that's there. Misconceptions. Soul naturally has doubts and erroneous ideas because he doesn't understand, because it is contradictory, seemingly, to what is there. Because God, who's the complete whole, interacting with his complete energy, you know, everything's going to be complete, but that means you have everything there working harmoniously. That means there's going to be seeming contradictions, right? Because you're dealing with all the opposites of everything, right? All working together, like that. So, such misconceptions should be corrected. If they're not corrected, then it will get in the way of devotional service. It'd be an article. So that's why education is so important. Right?
Okay.
So then, Bhagavad Gita 3:32. The injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the essence of all Vedic wisdom and is therefore eternally true without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so this truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. They will never be liberated from the bondage of fruit of action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. Right, so if he's liberated, then he'll be able to follow them. So some become liberated by following them sincerely, some by sincerely understanding them, trying to follow, whether they can follow or not, they come to the same position. Right? You know, it's just like the devotee, by his attachment to Krishna, and following what he can, gets to the liberated platform. And the yogi, by his very exacting method of Ashtanga Yoga, comes to the same position. Right? So whether one is sadhana siddha or kripa siddha or whatever it is still one's getting to the same position. So that's important to note. That doesn't mean that endeavor to follow isn't important. When he says he can't follow, that means he's trying. He knows it's right, he's trying. And even if he can't, he's still trying. But this idea, oh, it doesn't matter, that's crooked. That person won't won't get benefited. That person won't get elevated. Like that. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. Right? He may not fully enjoy, but he is not resentful of this principle. Right? In other words, you can never resent the Vedic injunctions. There may be injunctions that are not important to us, like Shraddha ceremonies, this and that. But things that Srila Prabhupada has given us, we can't be resentful towards. We may not be able to follow them nicely. We try our best. Right? But if we're resentful, then that becomes crooked. We'll never get anywhere. Right? Without consideration of defeat and hopelessness. Because defeat and hopelessness, that's the mode of ignorance. Right? Means you, it didn't work, you try again. Hopelessness means, if there's no hope, means you have no identity. Because without identity, you can't work. So that means you're giving up, actually, that Krishna's God, I'm a servant. Because you say, oh, it can't work, I can never do this. What do you mean? It's not you doing it anyway. It's you wanting to do it and sincerely trying to do it, and then Krishna blesses. Right? That's the position. In mantras 17 and 18, the devotee surrenders to the Lord and prays for shelter and guidance. Similarly, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna surrenders to Lord Sri Krishna and prays to be accepted as his disciple. Quote, now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Bhagavad Gita 2.7. The spiritual science should be studied under the guide, should be studied under a bona fide spiritual master. Lord Sri Krishna becomes Arjuna's guru and teaches him the science of self-realization. Okay, so that ends our chronological study of the Sri Upanishad. So you see is that it's Upanishad, but it's exactly what Srila Prabhupada is describing in Krishna consciousness. Right? This is very important because Bhaktivinoda points out in the Shikshamrita that the Vedic Krishna consciousness, or the process of devotional service, is founded on the Upanishads and Vedanta. Right? And if it's not based on that, it's not bona fide. So we see here is that's because this is what the essence of the Vedas is. The Upanishads are the essence of the Vedas. Right? And so then in there we see it's just devotional service. Right? It's used in the language is very intellectual. Like that. Like you have something on health. So if you have it from a medical journal, it's very technical. You have it from some new agey thing, it's very like mystical and enlightening and enlivening and those kind of things. But it's talking about the same thing. You know, drink enough water, you'll be healthy. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Upanishads therefore are using this technical Vedic language, but it still is simply meaning, you know, pure unalloyed devotional service. So that's the Upanishad. So then now, so this is the end, and I mean, ending here means with the Upanishad. This, after Gaur Purnima, we'll start with the analytical study of the Upanishad. And then, so this will end the classes until after Gaur Purnima. Okay. Shanti Ji, you know, is organizing all these things for the study for the students. Has a few things to say in conclusion for this class. Please, sir.
So on behalf of all of us here, in the Rupanuga Paramartika Vijapit Bhakti Shastri course, I'd just like to take a few moments to express our appreciation for the kind sharing of your wonderful Krishna consciousness, which is based so expertly on the Vedic paradigm. Thank you for unlocking so many of the secrets of the scriptures, which most people have got no idea about. And we're going to ask if anybody else has something that they would like to express, that they can come up and, not in a formal way, but just say a few words. I'm not sure whether everybody is aware, but this adult education course, it's been in the ether for a long time. It's been part of the whole Gurukul system, but it was revived again after you took compassion upon His Holiness Suhota Maharaj and engaged him in preparing study materials. So thank you for continuing, despite the fact that he put so much energy in and killed himself in the process. Krishna took him away at the right time when he was fully absorbed in the Bhagavatam. So it's a wonderful example of somebody who fully benefited from absorbing themselves in Krishna conscious study. So we're all seeing how we're developing by following your example, by trying to adopt some of the elements of your lifestyle which are beyond our comprehension. But slowly we take them up. And as a group of students, we managed to get together a tiny token of our appreciation.
Thank you.
And we'd like to pray that we can continue to stay here, hearing from you. The fog is just starting to dissipate. And hopefully we can get a greater glimpse of your vast vision of how to expand education and ultimately assist the world in becoming Krishna conscious.
Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. Okay. So if anybody else has, Radhika was preparing something.
Yeah.
I guess I spoke enough over the last few weeks and months. Thank you for answering my questions.
Oh, no, it's good.
And for taking up this, continuing this very important task of training the devotees who are greatest assets in this Krishna consciousness movement, our future leaders and preachers in ISKCON are being formed right here. So thank you very much for your effort and encouragement.
I would like to say that to come here has been as refreshing as the first time I visited the Hare Krishna temple. It's very inspiring to see some of the bodies, see the Prabhupada's teaching so much. And it's, I really admire your knowledge and your conviction and experience. It's a good fortune for us.
Yeah, I've only been to a few classes, but I'm very inspired by what I'm hearing. And it's not common that a person is broad and deep at the same time. And this is what we need. We need breadth and depth, because if we're just broad, we tend to be shallow. And if we're just deep, we tend to be narrow. But here we have the complete package. And I came today, I didn't know it was the last day, but I came to ask Maharaj, I'm just saying this now because I'm hoping it'll put him on the spot, so he'll have to listen, he'll have to give me an audience, to see if I can somehow be involved in this kind of education. I don't know how or what, but it's very inspiring, so we can maybe talk about it afterwards.
Jai.
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 Jai. Thank you very much for sharing your deep realization with us, showing us how to try to see Krishna in everything. That is why, like Maharaj lecture, is always teaching us how to see, because that is the essence of Krishna consciousness. So he's trying to form his deep realization how we can connect every of our life to Krishna consciousness. So this actually touching my heart. And I try every day also to try to remember Maharaj's instruction, how we can try to see Krishna in everything, because that is the essence of Krishna consciousness. So this actually appreciated so much in Maharaj's classes. And every day we can just see this, what Maharaj is always stressing. And if we can just try to always think about this, and surely follow Maharaj's instruction, we can one day also become Krishna conscious just by thinking of this instruction. So Maharaj, thank you very much by sharing your deep realization and, you know, all this. Thank you.
I just want to say one more thing. I've had this prejudice against analysis. I've been proud of being a right-brainer. But you've shown me that it's possible to be analytical and be juicy at the same time. Rasamalayam. So I'm looking forward to that because I deliberately neglected analysis. And I've suffered because of that. I've made some bad mistakes in my life. So I hope by your sangha I can become a complete person.
It was coming to mind that this process is very special because we see is that when the acharyas are coming, but who are they in the spiritual lila? They're, you know, the gopis or the cowherd boys or other personalities that you don't see them sitting around and talking philosophy. The most you get sometimes technical is Madhu Mangal, let me make a few comments. You know? Here and there, but generally it's kind of he goofs on the scriptures and that. So it'll all be there. So it's not that it's there, but you see when those people come here, you know, our Mother Jashoda comes here, that how technical they can get and how exacting. I mean, it's this Mother Jashoda who removes the misconception of impersonalism from, you know, Nimai's presentation. You know, and she's just, you know, a simple housewife. So the point is that this combination, this natural combination, we also see another element. Yes, so therefore, even though one may know all these things, one is able to use it and apply it, you know, in the life. And so it just becomes part of the life. You don't see it. Generally, it's taken as someone who is very analytical would be very much like scholarly and a pundit, and that would be their identity there. But it's not actually. It's not, that's the whole point is being a scholar means, you know, in the Vedic sense is that you can apply it. They do have scholars, but those are kind of offshoots that are not necessarily respected. Like you notice in the beginning of our books, generally they're, you know, in the group that's written off, you know, moralists, religionists, you know, these, you know, jnanis and scholars and all academics, they're all just thrown out, you know, which generally we would take as very special people, you know. Like that. So, yeah.
In Bhagavatam, what is it? No shobhate? Knowledge which can't be applied or doesn't look well.
No, it doesn't look well.
And you very wonderfully connect it all in a way that's really filling in a lot of gaps for me.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. And the other is on that is the balance of the rasa and the tattva. Is that the acharyas can go so far into the rasa, but in the same depth they can go into the tattva. And I've seen Jiva Goswami be giving a very technical point that, you know, is like on ontology or epistemology, very, very technical of existence, and then in the same sentence flip that point into the eternal lila and show where is part of the pastimes. Like that. So that's the completeness of it, is that they can do both of that. So that's the element that is trying to be taught. Because the idea is that it doesn't change anybody. So whatever they are doing, they'll be the same, but they'll be more knowledgeable and more able to do that more nicely. So that's the idea of these courses. That's also especially why, of the courses, this course, the Gita level, is so lengthy. No one runs a 3-year Bhagavad Gita course. It's because of what you're saying, that breadth and depth has to be obtained. Then you'll do the bhakti by Baba, then very quickly, you know, seeing for the volume of matter. You're dealing with, you know, one Gita, maybe another, it's like 2 volumes. You're dealing with, I think it's, what is it, about 17 volumes, I think, in Bhakti by Baba or something. It's like you're dealing with a lot there, you know, so much greater, but you'll do it in the same amount of time. You know, Chaitanya Charitamrita is 11 volumes in the same amount of time. So,
because you've learned how to connect that.
Yeah, you've learned how to connect. So what would take, let's say what we might take a whole day to discuss here, would be 5 minutes once one has understood it and one is able to. So that's the idea. Is that's why, even though sometimes it may appear to be a distraction in the class, that we get off into these tangent points, you know, to the management or into, you know, some other issue and this and that, I don't see the problem because it's actually part of our life. We hear it every day. So if we can see those and connect those properly with Krishna, it won't be a problem later. Then when we're getting to these fine points in Bhagavatam, then we'll understand them, because just in one verse, so many major points are coming out. Because, you know, the great authority. So what's a great authority? You could go on for days discussing, you know, gurus and parampara and all this and that. But just say, you know, so when we say, so this means the previous acharyas, then we don't have to explain everything else, but in this class we do. So therefore, the depth that one can go and the connections one can make are very great. So that's why it's seeming moving at a very slow pace, like that. But the idea is that it should go deep. You know, like when they do the trawler nets, they go very deep. They have to move very, very slow, but they catch a lot. You know?
Foundation is right.
Yeah, the foundation is right. Because if the foundation is there, everything else will come very quickly. Like that.
Sastramaj, he was making the point that the basis of this course is that strong association.
Yes, strong association.
And then with those support, those exchanges, then we can examine everything from so many different points of view.
Mm. Yeah.
And come up with
truth. Yeah, truth. That's just like that other day we had that one devotee. He had a very serious misgiving. And that's not a problem. That's why the course is there, is that he's got doubts, misgivings. It's a forum to discuss them, but it must be through the point of inquiry. One wants to know, like that. It's not a matter of argument or debate, you know. So then, because that turned into a debate, and I guess he didn't feel comfortable with it, we haven't seen him since. So that's it's not a good thing. But but the point is that discussions, whatever it is, can be discussed, you know. So. But the idea, because istagosti means that it's the association discussing about the Lord. So because of that, then any topic can be discussed, but it just must be discussed in the proper method. That's all. That's the thing. Like before, I see so much of the time, Sahotamara, he wouldn't take questions, because so much of the time, especially some years back, the questions weren't properly presented. So he just didn't want to deal with it. Because in dealing with it, you distract it from the proper, you know, sadhusanga that was actually going on. But now, after so many years, then we see is that the devotees have, and it's, you know, in catching that mood and all that, so now the questions become a very valuable part of the discussion in the association. Okay. Yes?
Well, I thank you very much. The day before yesterday, we were here. And they show us everything around, and the most amazing is when I saw how the boys are engaged, all kinds of activities, cooking, even smallest one, they are carrying the pots to the place to wash them. How practical. And I talked to them and I asked them, they feel you are showing them affection, and they like to stay here and be trained and learn and develop character. It's very encouraging. We must somehow inform parents that they will be convinced that the children will benefit if they give children for education.
I just wanted to express my personal appreciation in this kind of situation, because I joined this movement 10 years back, and all these years I was personally lacking this kind of knowledge, this kind of association, and this kind of environment which I'm receiving here. And for me, I can frankly and truly speak that it's just like a dream coming true, because this knowledge and art of connecting everything with Krishna and this deepness and the deepness of the essence of very patience which you present is in such a complete form of beingness, about to be the fullness of it. So I'm praying that you will be fortunate enough to appreciate this completeness of this association and affection which you have with the beginning part. And also, although it may be not very appropriate for the etiquette to give blessings to the teacher, as being a student, but since this knowledge is, we can see that this knowledge and art of appreciation of what is mentioned in Srila Prabhupada's books and how it's related to the Vedic culture and this art of connecting everything with Krishna, how it's lacking in the present devotional community, unfortunately. So on the basis of this, I want to wish you long years of service to the beloved spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and many followers who will spread this message, the qualified followers who will spread this message all over the devotional community. And by the blessings of the Vaishnavas, I hope to be such kind of followers.
May it be so. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Swami ki
jai,
Sri Prabhupada ki
jai,
Lord Premanand.
So we'll get back to business. The students who are registered, we've got the next essay topic for you. Don't leave without picking that up. The seminars will start over on the other side. We have a few ideas up our sleeve, so keep in touch here to find out if we can give some seminars here during that break period. And we'll see you all again. Those people who will be remaining, some people have to leave, but for those people who are staying, then the course will continue until Nisringa Chaturdasi, and then for 2 years beyond, and then another 12 years beyond that. Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.
All sorts of things, MIH.
I mean, it's not.